Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 56, Matt Kelly. Okay, so if you've not heard of the Young Guns, you're going to hear about them now. The Young Guns is a group. Used to be four young guys in their 20s, maybe early 30s. They kind of got a crazy uncle named Dwayne Malik added to them, and I'd already interviewed him. And they got a mom, KIB, or Karen Isker Bergsagel, added. And this is a group of people who really work together, exchange ideas, but they're really competitive. And they're all, you know, mega sellers, every one of them. And it's just such a great story. And so I'm going to focus in on the four young guns, the four guys, and this series will kick off with Matt. And I think you're just going to love the interview. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Man, I am jazzed. I am getting ready to learn from somebody who's probably as young as my son. One of the young guns, one of the original young guns, if there is such a thing, Matthew Kelly. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Man, I am just blown away. Matt lives not too far from me, maybe 20, 30 minutes away. And he was telling me earlier he's been running through my town and raping and pillaging all the stores in town because I'm doing a poor job of it. I appreciate that, Matt.
Well, thank you
I hope you've done well. You know, your story, you know, seeing you and the other, well, three guys, I'll call the four true young guns, you guys have really done a great job in such a short period of time. You've only been selling a year and a half. But that's not the beginning of your entrepreneurial life, is it?
No. It started a few years before that, being involved with other things. I started out with doing extreme couponing, kind of as something fun to do a few years ago.
Yeah, but that's a skill. You know, it's one of those things, and I'm a math guy, and so I'm pretty good at math. I'm probably hamstrung because I have that business degree, so it really ties my hands. You just seem to naturally have a gift for it. I mean, were you trained in any way? I mean, did you go to college for math? I mean, is that...
No, I have a business admin degree.
Okay.
I've always been relatively good with math and figuring things out and trying to find the best angle at everything.
Is that what it takes to be really successful at extreme couponing?
It does. It really helps because you need to be able to think on your feet whenever things go wrong or when you're in the store expecting this to happen and that doesn't happen. You know, you need to be able to adjust.
And so give me an example of something that goes wrong. So you thought they, you know, they didn't limit coupons and then they decide to limit them? Is that an example?
Yeah, and a big example would be like Kmart's really confusing to people, the way their deals work, when they double coupons, when they don't double coupons. You know, and you might get up to the register and you think something costs $4.99, it rings up $4.89. That 10 cents can really throw you off. And that can end up throwing the whole transaction where you're not up to enough to where your coupons are going to double. You know, that can really change things. So then you got to grab
a pack of gum or
a lollipop. Yeah. Kmart has these lollipops that are perfect for that.
And so you've bought hundreds of lollipops, haven't
hundreds
you?
Of lollipops and packets of Kool-Aid. Hundreds, thousands of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, how long did you do that for?
I did that for probably 2 years. And after about 6 months of doing that, I realized I need to sell this stuff because I have way too much.
I've seen the pictures, like they used to be a TV show, and I've never watched it, but I saw like the commercial for it, and they showed their basement looked like it was a prepper's basement, you know, preparing for World War III. Is that the way you got?
Yeah, it got real bad. My garage was overtaken in about 6 months of doing it, and, you know, I ended up buying a van and buying a trailer just to carry stuff back and forth to the flea markets. And then one person at the flea market asked me if I ever thought about selling on Amazon. And I laughed at him. I said, I'm making way too much money at this flea market to deal with that crap. You know, and then time went on. I talked to him another one or two times. And then I figured I need to just give it a shot for myself. So that's whenever I started pillaging through my flea market stuff to see what I could do with it on Amazon.
And you're selling premium, you know, soaps and stuff like that. I mean, it's just a perfect thing that would go well on Amazon, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, toothpaste, toothbrushes, allergy medicine, deodorants, just a huge variety of things that you can sell on Amazon. But a lot of people don't really think about that because it's all smaller stuff.
And you probably have very little money into this stuff at this point, right?
Right.
Matter of fact, you still have it. You still have a lot of it. You probably, whatever money you did have, you had tied up in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, So you left the flea market circle, or do you still dabble in that?
I don't do it anymore. I had been doing Amazon from the time I started. I was still doing the flea market and Amazon for probably 3 or 4 months.
And working a full-time job at that point,
and
too?
And working a full-time job. I was a supervisor in a distribution facility. So I was working
I don't want to lose that when we come back to that because I want to talk about that.
I was working 48 to 60 hours a week there and, you know, trying to maintain that, a family, the side hustle of the flea market, and being so excited about Amazon. Just had a lot of stuff going on at the same time there.
I've sold once at a flea market, and I bought a DVD store out. And, you know, this is my approach to it. The night before, I'm out in the driveway alphabetizing all the DVDs. And then the next morning, you know, I'm up at 4 in the morning. I'm the guy who drives down there, gets in line early, right? Unloads, got there, sold until noon, and made 200 and some odd dollars. And I remember somebody coming saying, oh, that's a great day. You've done, you know, that's normally what we almost all do. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, I'm going to pull my eyes out. I couldn't do this. I left. I put the stuff back in, and I went down, and somebody had a some kind of toy store they were liquidating. I went and bought everything they had and said, I just made, you know, $2,000 in 10 minutes. And I'm like, I'll never do that again. That was the one experience.
Yeah, I had weekends near the end of the flea market there. I had weekends where I was bringing in a couple thousand dollars on a weekend.
Yeah, there are a lot of people doing that, and I always assume that they are extreme couponers because I see a lot of those people. I haven't been to a flea market in a while, but when you'd go, you'd see three or four of those people selling all the health and beauty, and I've always assumed that's where they got it.
Yeah, and the timing was perfect for me because things have changed with couponing, the rules.
Oh, really? You know, explain that because I don't know that. I don't really use them. So
now pretty much every coupon you get has a limit on it. 3-4 years ago, that wasn't the case. I mean, you could go to stores and use 100 of the same coupon. You know, now you can't for the most part. So it was really perfect timing for me to get out of that because it is a lot harder to do it, you know, correctly now than it was a few years ago.
Well, I imagine, though, the skills that you learn and establish, the relationships that you've made, right? Because if the store manager didn't kill you, they were your best friend,
yeah.
Right? It's one or the other,
yeah,
right? There's no in between.
Because, you know, I was able to order stuff from stores, you know, big quantities of stuff. They knew I would get it. So when I started on Amazon, I didn't really have to learn that part of it. You know, I already had the relationships established with some stores, and that really helped.
And does it still help today?
Yes. Yeah, because yeah, so I still order quantities of stuff from time to time.
So if a store wants to, let's just say they're selling, you know, Jergens hand soap, I'll make that up, right? And they're selling it, and they, rather than you have clear off their shelf every week, let's just say it's something that you can sell, you know, every week.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a relationship with them, is it a big deal for the store manager to buy an extra 2 or 3 cases?
No, it generally
because they
isn't.
See a benefit, right?
No,
yeah,
the biggest thing that helps is I was like in communication with a lot of people in different Facebook groups and stuff, and I would get ads for stores early, So like a sale that might start Sunday, I could order stuff Wednesday or Thursday beforehand.
So you would call the store manager, you had a relationship, and say, hey, Steve, I see you're going to be selling the Jergens hand soap at this. Would you order two extra cases? I'll come and take them off your hand at that price.
Yeah,
so you don't ask for a better price. You just get it at that price.
Right. Because also then if you wait until the week of the sale and you try to order stuff then, it could be too late or the warehouse could be out. So if you're ordering it a week, a couple days before the sale starts, you're pretty much guaranteed to get what you're ordering.
What's it take to have a relationship like that with the store manager? What's your approach? I mean, so let's assume it's somebody that you had not dealt with before. Walk us through how you would approach somebody like that.
Well, it would not happen quickly at all. I mean, you have to build up where you're ordering one case this time, four cases next time, then 10 cases, and then you take a leap of faith to go from 10 cases to, 160 cases. And
you've ordered that many?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I've ordered more than that. More than that before.
But do you tell them what you're doing with it?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're honest and candid, but you just work with them over time.
Yeah, it's really
there's
a
respect
thing
issue.
To make up stories because you can only make up stories so many times.
Yeah.
And when you go into the same stores and have a different story every time, it's not a good thing.
And plus, it's not good for your own soul, I guess.
Yeah,
it's just wrong. It's not. Hey, I'm okay with no. I mean, I'm okay with no. Just that's cool.
Right.
Okay, so I want to go to the other thing that you had mentioned, because I think there's another – I'm going to tie it all together. I know where I'm going with this because I know where you are. I know what kind of year you had. Beyond incredible. But I think these are all things, these little – no, they're not little, right? So you've got a business degree. You've got that mind for it. You're able to handle, to be able to think on your feet, be able to react quickly and figure out how to buy a couple thousand lollipops, right, or Kool-Aid packets,
mm-hmm.
right, whatever it takes. Those are skill sets. But you worked in a warehouse, and not only worked in a warehouse, you worked your way up. You were a supervisor in a warehouse.
Right.
So you've seen the logistical side of business.
Yeah. You see a big benefit from working there. You see – like the time schedules of holidays, how holidays work, when grocery chains start receiving their product. It might not be on the floor yet, but you know when they're getting it. You see stuff like that, and you learn trends like that.
I always say when you see a grocery flyer, I mean, think about it, right? That thing had to be inserted into the newspaper and put out, right?
Mm-hmm.
How long have they been sitting on it, right? They've received it for a week or 2 weeks. Somebody had to print that thing somewhere, right? So that had to get printed and taken off and put in. Somebody had to design that flyer, right? So that take time. So, I mean, you're talking weeks and weeks and weeks backwards, right? You're working your way backwards.
Yeah.
And so when you're in that distribution mode, you get to see, this product's coming in. It's not going to be sold for 6 to 8 weeks, right?
Right.
The other thing that I would think that would be a huge benefit is being able to handle those large transactions. When you've got 160 cases of merchandise, I mean, that's just not easy to move around, right? I mean, there has to be some process built into that.
Right. There is. And then you get used to it. I worked in the receiving department mainly. So, we received trailer loads of stuff over and over and over and over again. You get used to it,
So your ability to open it, box, cut it down, boom, 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 throw a label on it, or not, if you're commingling, whatever,
mm-hmm.
not a big deal for you. Slapping it back on a pallet. Are you palletizing stuff? Are you at that level?
Yeah, I started doing LTL, I think, around October.
Oh, wow.
And September, October. And LTL is just awesome. I had to stop doing it because of Christmas, the receiving times and all. But LTL is the goal for me to do pretty much everything.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take us to break. And we come back, I want to talk about your business because you crushed it. I mean, you didn't – you took it – I mean, five times growth. I mean, you grew and grew and grew mm-hmm. and grew in a year and a half, and you're doing incredible volume. So I want to talk about that when we come back.
Okay.
Be right. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. Okay, I knew you'd enjoy this. Now think about what he's saying. I mean, we are talking about somebody who has a lot of different skill sets developed over time, but he's been able, I think, really, really well to put them into practice. He's been able to, you know, take what he's learned at one thing and advance it, but he's advanced it in a big way, and I just love the fact that he's planning and plotting for next year. He's had an incredible year. He had a great year last year, but he's had an incredible year this year, and he's saying, hey, I want to get better, smarter. And I think those building blocks, that foundation that we all have from things in our life we can draw against are what you really need to focus on this year. It's a new year. It's a great opportunity. These four stories are going to blow you away, and look forward to the next one because it's just as good. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with one of the original young guns. You guys got to get tattoos or something saying that's what they said to KIB. She got to get a tattoo. The original young guns, Matt Kelly. And Matt is incredible seller, just having an incredible year. He had a great year last year by any stretch of the imagination. And you went full-time last year, right, Matt?
I went full-time in October 2014.
Okay, so last year, this is still 2015, mm-hmm. Although this might come out, might be January. So, okay, so October 2014, you left a pretty good job. Were you secure? Well, let me ask that. Did you have enough inventory from your extreme couponing days to have a cushion that would carry you long enough if you didn't have success? I mean, you didn't roll low on seven.
If Amazon wouldn't have worked out for me, I could have made the money I needed to make with the flea markets.
Okay, so you could have you had a B plan, not ideal one.
Yeah,
but you had
the
worst bridge,
case scenario
maybe.
Was I have to do the flea market circuit, and I would have made it.
Now, knowing what you know now, I'm sure your answer would be, "Hey, I'd go sooner." But knowing what you know now, being a parent and having all those responsibilities, would that have been the smart move, or do you think it was the right time to build up and get to that level?
Yeah, it definitely is not smart to just jump out of your secure job when you have a family and kids, you know, that look out for you.
I've always heard Dwayne Malik always say, you know, that $30,000 a month number, you got to get at least to that to get to a place where you can make enough money to support a family. And I think that seems pretty reasonable, about $360 a year. That's probably about right. Would you agree?
Yeah. My goal in my head was once I received a $20,000 2-week payout.
Okay.
That was my goal.
So a 2-week payout. So you're on 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you took a business, you went full time. And were you still working out of your house at that point?
Yeah. Whenever I started, whenever I went full time, I was still in my house for about a month and a half until I leased a building. And the biggest reason I leased the building was I had something that I missed out on because I didn't have the space.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't have the space to do, you know, this offer that came up to me. And it would have been such a big deal. I said, that's not going to happen again.
Now, you said an offer that came to you. Now, without divulging your secrets, of course, how would an offer come to you, especially, you know, that point of your business? Because you're relatively new to it.
Yeah, so one of the stores that I had been dealing with for a while, and back during the flea market times, offered me to buy a large amount of product. It was multiple pallets of stuff that I would have had to get delivered. It's a great opportunity.
So they had the inventory.
Yeah.
They were looking to unload it.
And I had been looking for that inventory for a while, but basically you couldn't get it. You know, it wasn't available. And then all of a sudden it sprung upon me that they had it available and were ready to sell it. And I couldn't take it because I had no room for it.
You had the funding, you just didn't have the capacity
right.
built. So now you're on the other side of that. Did you overbuild your capacity? Could you pretty much handle anything right now?
No, I'm actually looking for another building in January. So I'm going to be hopefully moving out of this building into another building.
And why would you – I mean, what doesn't work in the building today that you have? Because you're not holding inventory. Your goal is to get it in and turn it around, right?
Right.
You're not merchant fulfilling. You don't want to be in that business,
right?
Not too
right? much, but I am buying some stuff right now in anticipation of selling next December.
Oh, wow.
So
okay,
there are some things I'm buying. But the building I'm in does not have a dock, a loading
okay.
dock. So I have a forklift that I can load and unload trailers with,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have a dock here, and it makes it really difficult.
Oh, it's inefficient. I mean, just in
yeah.
lost time, you know, when you – and I don't think people think of this, right? They say, oh, you know, my lease is only $1,000 a month, right? And, you
mm-hmm.
know, anything is an extra $1,000. Yeah, but, you know, it doesn't take you long in man hours, a couple hours a week to eat that $1,000 very,
right.
very quickly.
And
know?
That's exactly what I was thinking too. But because I don't have a dock, I had to buy a forklift. You know, there's a lot more liability in having a forklift.
Oh, yeah. You got to have people trained and
you know,
all that
I
kind of
stuff. If I spent more money a few months or a year ago and got a building with a dock, I wouldn't have had to buy a forklift. I wouldn't have the liability of having that. So there is a trade-off.
Mm. And it's really smart to think about it that way because, you know, when you start talking liability insurance – those things, you know, that's one of the questions asked. Do you have a forklift? And then if you have employees, they have to be trained and certified now to operate a forklift. There's a whole bunch of rules on that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, by thinking that through long term, sounds like you're heading in a better direction. So do you think it'll be a lot more expensive for you to get a bigger space? Or, you know, I always find that just to rent a commercial space, there's a base price. A little bit bigger or even a lot bigger isn't that much more.
Yeah, I think it'll be close to double what I'm paying
okay.
right now. But the build, I'm only paying $800 a month for the space that I'm in, which is awesome.
No, it's awesome, awesome.
But it just doesn't work for me anymore.
Right. Well, you've outgrown it. You've found, you know, I guess, you know, as I was thinking about doing this interview and I'm thinking, what do I ask a guy who's clearly have figured out these things? I just, the thing that I appreciate about you and the whole group of you guys is you're just willing to do it. You're not talking about it. You're willing to put your head down and do the work. You guys just came off an incredible month. Are you out there saying what your sales in the month of December, is that public knowledge or no? And I'm okay with no. I don't want to embarrass you.
No, I haven't posted it
okay.
anywhere. I haven't talked about it, but I think it's slightly under 600,000.
In 1 month?
Yeah, slightly under 600,000. It might be over 600,000 by now.
And most of your sales in that month would have been in the toy category, I would guess?
Yeah, it was toy, then grocery, then shoes. Than everything else.
And so you've been to do that kind of volume when you have only a couple employees, you must have been, I mean, were you home?
Well, I made a deal with my wife in the beginning of December that, you know, let me run for this month and then we'll do something special after it's all over with. And it worked out that way.
Okay.
I don't want to do it again.
Okay. But it was a great lesson, though. I mean, you know, I think the thing that I appreciate, too, is that when you're getting ready to train other people, you now have walked the walk. You're not just going to say, oh, I expect you to do that. You know what's expected and how difficult it is and challenging, right?
Right.
You know, and so that really helps you get employee buy-in. So I think that's a great example and a great lesson. And you also learn what not to do. I bet you looking at it next year, you would do things different, right?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I hear a lot of people say, it sounds like a lot of work. It sounds like a lot of work. It is a lot of work, but it's one of those things that you do at one time. And, you know, you can learn so much and make so much out of that one experience that it makes everything else easier after that.
Yeah, you put yourself in a position now. I saw your payout, ungodly.
Yeah, that was
you,
that was
crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, but it's a result of your hard work. I interviewed Robin Jacoby, and she talked about how Amazon is, you know, truly is the equalizer, right? There really is no discrimination. If you're willing to do all that hard work and put in all that effort,
absolutely,
you can get that reward.
Absolutely.
Regardless if you're a man or a woman or color or race.
It doesn't matter who you are or where you're from. You know, you get out of it. You can get out of it what you put into it.
You really can. Now, you're part of this group called the Young Guns. I don't know who came up with that phrase, but I like it. Because you're a group of guys in their 30s, right?
Yes.
Young to me,
yep.
Relative to me. But you guys are really kind of like the four musketeers, or maybe there's a fifth or a sixth sometimes, but that really work together in some ways, but yet still remain competitive, correct?
Right. We share a lot. We trust each other. That's a big thing. And it's not all about business either, too. It's like we have a friendship amongst
the
group.
Well, if you're having to have that conversation with your wife, my bet is the other guys have had to have that same conversation with theirs, right? And how did you handle this? Well, here's what mine said, you know, and I'm sure that goes a long way.
Yep. I know that we all know how each other's situation was, you know, during Christmas. And we're all in recovery mode right now.
Yeah, you've got to be down for a couple of days, right? I mean, just
a while.
Have you shut down, like, completely, just literally just trying to stop?
Yeah. This week I'm having the warehouse cleaned out. Anything that's in here that can be shipped needs to get out of here. We're donating a lot of stuff. We're not shipping anything to Amazon this week. We're just cleaning up. And it's a voluntary work week, too. If they don't want to work, they don't need to work. So it's very down.
Well, it's a good breather. It's a respite, right? It gives you that chance to reflect, to say, I wouldn't do this again, but you already committed to it, so you had to follow through with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how long will it take you to find a new place? How long will it take you to transition? I always wondered that.
By the end of January, I will be in a new building.
Oh, wow.
Certainly. I have a few places that I've checked out, that I've scoped out. Once I decide to move, we will be out of here and in there in 3 or 4 days.
Now, the large percentage of your business is retail ARP, correct?
Right.
Will you move into wholesale or private label or any of those things?
I do have a few wholesale accounts.
Oh, cool.
And the one account is amazing. And I'm going to be putting, over the next couple weeks, a lot of work into that to try to get some sort of an exclusive arrangement with them. I need to work more on wholesale this year. It's like one of the top priorities for me, basically because it can lessen, you know, the amount of RA I need to do to hit the numbers I want to hit.
Now, you had a crushing number. I mean, you crushed it. Did you hit your goal?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
So you had a goal. You exceeded it. What's that like? I mean, what's that done for you?
Incredible. Because the end of November, I was like panicking, thinking that I wasn't going to hit this arbitrary number that I set that didn't really need to get hit, but that's what I said I was going to do. And I did not think I was going to hit it. Around December 10th, I realized that it was actually going to happen. And that was just incredible.
It's got to be very rewarding. And again, I sit back and I think to myself, okay, here's a guy who has a business degree. He's clearly good with numbers, has the ability to think things through, can react, has been through the logistics side of the business, right? So he clearly has that, built a facility, you know, small as it might be. You still built it knowing that you got to bring in inventory, move it through, get it processed, get it out, all those kind of things. All those things that you built, and then you fill the funnel with what you filled, and boom, you hit your target. I mean, that's got to be an incredible feeling.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it was completely amazing that we ended up hitting the number that we were shooting for.
Did you set goals along to help the other three too? the other three guys? I mean, is that the way it was done? Did you all set your own goals? I mean, I know there's some competitive.
No, we all set our own goals for ourselves. It wasn't any group thing. We're all happy for each other that they hit, you know, each person hit their goals. And they're all pretty similar goals, too, because it's all a similar time frame for most of us.
Because you knew that, you know, make it this quarter. Do you think that, you know, I guess looking back at it, right, and looking at last year and looking at what you did different this year, why don't you break down a couple examples of things that you did different this year that you didn't do last year? And then if you could even take it a step further to say the things that you won't do next year that you did this year. So do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I would say differently this year was networking with other sellers, communicating.
And there's only a few of you, right? There's not like there's 100 of you, right? This was just
no,
a small
just
private
a few
group.
Of us. Just a few of us. And I talk with a few other sellers from time to time, but not in depth, you know. Working with other sellers, our group, the Young Guns group, pushing each other along, sharing product finds, sharing ideas is just amazing. Amazing. Also this year I started, you know, I started going on an overnight trip if I needed to buy stuff.
Cool.
I started going out of town a lot more, bought a bigger vehicle. You know, so I've basically, whenever I had an issue with space, I bought something bigger and I'll need something bigger for next year.
Yeah. It sounds like you've got a pattern going here, bud.
Yeah. So,
pretty soon there'll be a tractor trailer. You'll be driving around.
But really the biggest key I think has been networking and working together, because there might be times when you don't feel like running out and buying something. But then when you have somebody else, you know, showing you that they sold $30,000 of that item today, and it might make you push to go look for it a little bit more.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, that's the motivator right there, because you actually see the result. It's not like you're saying, well, I found a great deal to buy something. You're saying, hey, I bought these, or somebody's saying, I bought these things and they sold. Oh, and here's my sales.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. All right. Now that's enough for me.
Now, the biggest challenge I would say for this year for me was, I set a sales goal for December. I knew what that amounted to and the amount of dollars I needed to spend, you know, in inventory. I did not realize the amount of work it would take to spend that amount of money in a short amount of time.
You know, I remember a conversation you and I had this, I don't remember, 6 months ago or whatever. I was talking about something and you were like, well, how many items did you push through? You were quick to say, well, that's 1,000 items. If you process 1,000 items, Steve, you've done really well, blah, blah. I mean, you had all that stuff. I credit you with that. And you always in the back of my mind saying, Matt would say, hey, 1,000 items processed is a really good month of processing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've really taken that approach to it. So you're taking that approach to your whole business then, right? Breaking it down and saying, okay, I need to, if I want to hit, you know, $10,000 in sales and my average sale is $1,000, boom, I need to have this many and I'm going to sell this money. You know, I got to process. That's the way, are you approaching that pretty much the whole way through?
The end of November, I knew I needed to spend about $10,000 a day for about 2 weeks straight. And oh my gosh,
that's not easy to do.
No, it's not. And it was not fun. I just completely underestimated how hard it would be doing that, because I'm basically doing all the RA myself.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. So let's just use Target. Let's just make that example, right? So you're going into Target and your goal is to spend, you know, $2,000 at that store, right? Because you're going to hit 5 stores. How difficult is it? I mean, especially in a place like Target or Kohl's, right, where they're challenged, they would challenge you, right? You have the ability to get challenged. Where Walmart, you don't. Maybe we should use Walmart. So you go into a Walmart. It's not easy to drop, you know, $5,000 in a Walmart.
Yeah, it's not, but I did one of the out-of-town trips I did a few weeks ago. I ended up spending, I think, around $4,500, give or take a few hundred bucks, at like 5 different Walmarts.
Wow.
So that was going in looking for certain items, getting them and leaving and going to the next one. It wasn't really scouting around for anything.
Yeah, so you had how many SKUs would that have been?
I think I was probably shooting, like targeting 12 to 15.
So 12 to 15 different items.
Yeah.
And you're trying to buy as many of each of those as you can.
Yes.
Wow.
I got bit with one of them, but, you know, I still have it. I'm going to have it called back to me. I'll sell it next year.
Okay. So you're holding on to it. And so, yeah, I'm not a big return guy. I don't like
that. I don't do that either. It's not worth my time. Even if it was right, you know, I don't feel like it's right because when people return stuff to you, you get angry about it.
Right.
But
right.
It's also not worth your time,
right,
generally.
Right. And the other piece of advice, I always remember you talking about it this way, and this is another thing that stuck. I got some Mattisms, I guess I should say. I got a couple of them. Is that if you bought it at the right price, you could ride it all the way down to a break even and still be okay as long as you bought it at the right price, right?
Yeah,
you still follow that rule?
Yes. If your worst case scenario is you break even, that is incredibly awesome.
Well, there's only upside. Name anything. Name any investment other than a savings account where you're going to get 0.01% that you can do that, right? The stock market's not that way, right? And so this is if you break even, the worst case scenario is you break even. The best, which is probably almost outperforming a savings account. The only thing is upside, right?
Right. And another thing with, you know, as far as returns, if people think about returning stuff, you know, you might be better off selling that item at a $5 loss because it's not worth your time to take the time out of your day to go return that. You know, it might be better to just take the $5 loss. You know, I don't think a lot of people think about that.
Well, and the other thing, it improves your metrics, right? Because again, you're gonna have some velocity. You're gonna sell a lot. If you
right.
have feedback that you want, this will help you on the feedback because you're selling it cheap. It's not like you're gonna have problems because you're selling it cheap.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So you've got a lot going on. You've got big plans this coming year. Now, offline we had talked about that you want to get some more help. So where were the pinch points in your business this year? One of them you said was spending, right? Your ability to spend that much.
Spending. It's really hard to spend. Once you get up to a certain amount of volume that you're turning, it's really hard doing retail arbitrage to spend what I'm spending. Now, opportunities are endless in retail arbitrage right now, but you can still only spend so much, you know, being one person.
Yeah. And the concern I have, although I've talked to, I use Gary Baird as a great example. He's got seven people that source from him, or Brian Young. He's got a bunch of people, or David Shannon, who's got six people sourcing for him. That control, I'm a control freak, right? So that worry about whether they're going to be able to, you know, make sure the boxes are up to the standard, make sure this, make sure that. But I guess it is trainable. If you're saying, Steve, I need you to go to these Walmarts, here's the map, and buy these 12 items, buy as many as you can.
It is absolutely trainable.
That you trained me. I mean, It doesn't get much easier than that, right? I mean, that is pretty easy. This is all you got to do. It's when there's that go in and scan everything. That's not a scalable business, right? I mean, I don't think you can transfer that skill very well.
It's not right now. There's some tools that could be developed, you know, to make it a little more scalable.
Okay.
Definitely.
So you plan on getting some help next year in that sourcing side of the business?
Yeah. Well, I definitely need a few more people that are capable of taking lists and going and getting stuff. I also want to have kind of an assistant that is basically with me all the time for a few months. That way, when November
comes, fill up the cart. Right. Hey, fill up the cart, take it out to the car, come back and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And also when November comes, if the need's there to split off, you have somebody that's been with you a lot, you know, that
right.
sees what you're looking at. And I think there's a lot of value in that. Even if you're just paying somebody to be with you all the time.
Right. Somebody to talk to. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Gary calls them runners in that scenario, right? And having a runner, you know, it just really does make sense to be able to even if, hey, come and pick me up. And you know, I mean, I think there's a lot of value in that. I think that you're right. Because the other thing is, it gets tiring, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember Andy Slamets and I, we went to, I don't know where we went to one store, and he's like, man, it's like 20 minutes later, I'm tired. I don't like, he hated doing it. I mean, he was like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And he's right. You know, you're driving and you got to love that. But that sounds like something you really enjoy. I mean, do you enjoy the buying?
I do. I like working
still.
Yes, I do. I like working with stores. I like asking for discounts. I like, you know, hearing what they have to say to me. Because I ask for discounts a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
And so how hard is it to ask for a discount?
It's not hard. I mean, you might be successful half the time you ask. But, you know, if you know that you're getting a 10% discount on something at Walmart, for example, you might buy it at a great price, and then you get a 10% discount. So that puts you 10% farther ahead than your competition, unless they're doing the same thing.
Right.
So, you know, that's peace of mind knowing, well, I bought this probably 10% less than 90% of the other sellers. It just, it feels better.
Well, and again, you're back to that place where, hey, if you bought it at the right price, worst case scenario is you break even.
Right.
And then you move on, right? And you move on. Now, have you developed a lot of items, that replenishable phrase is a kind of a loose term anymore, but, you know, where things that you just know, you don't even have to look at the price anymore, you just go and buy them regularly?
Not so much. Last year I had a lot more. I didn't really ever get too concerned with that because I did have a few that were like home runs and I could order them from the manufacturer in huge quantities, and that it was great. Well, that mm-hmm. those items got shut down a few months ago because the packaging was horrible on them. So I will be looking for more next year, but I'll be looking more at wholesale replenishables. You know, there's so many different tools people use right now.
We'll talk about them.
With OA X-ray, Jungle Scout, people scanning sheets, you know, and having Scanalyze go through and evaluate items. There's just so many tools out there that it's really hard to get replenishables, in my opinion.
You know, that stick
for a while.
Right, unless you can get
and a
replenishable, as you're saying,
to me isn't something that's good for a month or two.
Well, I interviewed Todd Lammy, and I think Todd is the perfect example of a wholesale expert. Right, he's got very few SKUs. And he is, you know, he's the first one to say, Steve, I never even knew that all these other – these Facebook groups, I just put my head down and did the work because he didn't know any better. And he'll do well over seven figures, and it's all wholesale. And he's like, you know, I just order it. You know, he has a model, actually. He downloads a report from Amazon right into it, throws it in as an Excel model. It tells him what to order, and he just places his order. So he's been able to find true replenishables. But – their map, right, which is a big deal,
yep.
Right? So he don't have to worry about that price coming down, right? Those are all real powerful things about wholesale.
So I want to look to add that on top of what I'm doing now.
Right.
I had a guy for a few months that was helping me with wholesale, like contacting companies and answering emails and phone calls and everything. And that was great. I need to, this year, go back into looking at that again to have some help with that.
And was he able to find things for you?
Yeah, he was. And it did get to the point where I could let him basically order what I needed, and then I would review it. But he did all the communication.
Right. Now, Dan Metters and Eric Lambert, that's their whole business model.
Uh-huh.
And they use software that actually helps them with the ordering process now. They have figured that piece out, and I think that's a really important model if you are going to scale that up. That is something to figure out because you want to give control to order, but you also want to make sure that you're only getting what you need, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're tying up a lot of money. Now, let me ask you a personal question. Are you using credit? Are you afraid to use credit for all this stuff?
I'm not afraid to use credit at all. That's how I got started, really. I didn't have a lot of cash to get started. You know, I had products, but you can only scale so much unless you have endless amounts of cash sitting around. You can only scale so much so fast without leveraging credit.
Well, yeah, there is a, you know, cash flow is very crucial, especially if you're buying that volume of inventory. You're not getting paid for, you know, you're not seeing that money, especially if you don't have daily payouts, you're not seeing that money for weeks.
Right. Right.
And so that is a challenge.
And businesses use credit. Businesses right. leverage credit. That's what businesses do. You know, so it's not, there might be a few gigantic businesses out there that are run on cash, but I don't know of any of them.
So you're using a lot of tools, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're saying next year your plan is, hey, I'm going to expand my space, get some help in the area of your bottleneck, which is your sourcing. So you have no challenges on the processing side. You have that figured out?
Right. I have a woman that started working for me a few months ago, and she is fantastic with listing, finding the cost of items, choosing the correct listings, doing the research on items. She's great with creating shipments. So
is she setting the price too?
Yeah, I set my prices extremely high. She sets them extremely high. And then I use App Eagle to go in and correct prices. So yeah.
Well, that makes it easy, right? So you don't have to worry about an error.
Right.
Really, it's you would program the App Eagle. That's really where the error could be.
Right. So we have, she sets the prices extremely high on everything, and then App Eagle corrects it.
Do you, does she have the ability to, if you wanted to double your business, could you process that much more through?
Yeah, I could.
Are you commingling a lot?
I am commingling a lot.
Okay. Yeah, that would make sense. That's the only way you can handle that kind of volume.
Now, doing LTL, I stopped commingling a lot because of it splitting shipments. You know, if you label something and something else isn't labeled, it's going to put it into two different shipments.
Okay.
So cost-wise, with LTL, it's better to just label everything. Because I do a lot of groceries, so a lot of stuff needs labeled. Anyway.
Right. And is most of your LTL, so let's just say, you know, and I use inventory placement for the reason I remember when it wanted me to ship to 14 different warehouses one day, I'm like, this is crazy. I'm not doing that. So now it's pretty much, you know, I think I have pretty much three or four warehouses where most stuff goes, right, depending on the size.
Uh-huh.
And so with LTL, does it put your like products together, or tell us how that works, right? So how many shipments would a like an LTL get split into?
So typically, if it's not oversized, if it's all standard size stuff, all my LTL shipments will go to AVP.
Okay, so one location. So that's a huge benefit. And AVP is in Hazleton, PA, which is real close to where you are. So you're paying 22 cents a pound if you were sending regular. So LTL, it's got to be half that?
No, I think it's around three to four cents a pound.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, because once you get over a certain pallet threshold with LTL also, prices seem to stop going up.
Okay.
So
they're saying it's this much to process a pallet, and once it hits that point, that's it.
Yeah,
right? There's not
and also in my experience, once you hit a certain pallet threshold, you're paying for a whole trailer. So once you get over a certain number of pallet positions, your cost doesn't go up as you add pallets onto that trailer.
All right. That leads me to a question, right? So you said you don't have a dock. So you use Amazon's LTL freight forwarder, right? So they
Correct.
You reach out to them. They say, hey, I'm coming roughly this time frame. The truck is there. Then you have to go out with your forklift and as you say, bring it up, put it on, bring it up, put it on, bring it up. And that's a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the drivers will move the pallet from the back of the truck up to the front. Some of them won't. So those guys, you have to put a pallet jack in the back of the truck with your forklift and put one pallet in, then jump off the forklift into the truck, move it with the pallet jack, come back, jump on the forklift, bring another one out. That's not fun.
That's a lot of work. And how many days a week are you LTLing?
Before Christmas, I was doing probably 2 days a week on average.
Okay.
2 to 3 days having LTL pickups.
And in the past, you would have just had UPS come for boxes.
Yeah.
And they would probably come every day, right?
Yeah, they come every day. Over Christmas, we had 2 pickups a day. And they would send it 2 trucks. But,
yeah.
You know, also with LTL is, like, it's just a lot less boxes, because some stuff doesn't need boxed if it fits on the pallet correctly. So you're saving money in boxes. Less backbreaking work, you know, throwing all the boxes in the UPS truck. It's just so, a lot easier on that side of things.
So in January, you're going head on with the LTL.
We're already, any shipments that we started creating like the middle of last week, beginning of last week, we've started building LTL shipments again.
Okay. And how much more work is that than building a regular, you know, I guess now with box requirements, right? And LTL, do they require a per box bill of lading kind of same thing?
No, it's a lot less. So like, say I buy a Doc McStuffins mobile cart, you know, they're big, mm-hmm. big item. Normally with UPS, I'd have to put that in boxes, right? But
one in a box maybe, or yeah, two in a box.
But, you know, if I buy those mobile carts and if they're in boxes, I don't even know if they come in boxes or not, but I just know they're big and it's a dead item that I'm not buying. So
yeah.
If they come in boxes, you can just stack them all on the pallet. You don't have to put them inside other boxes too. So that's
okay.
Nice.
Okay. So that's an efficiency that you gain. And are you, you're plastic wrapping these pallets,
yep.
right? You don't have to strap them.
We shrink wrap them. And then put pallet labels on each pallet. You have to put a label on each side of the pallet. And then when UPS comes, they put their tracking. UPS Freight usually picks up for me.
Okay.
Put their tracking numbers on them and give you the bill. They sign a bill for you, give it back to you, and then they take your stuff. And before Christmas, there was maybe an extra day, sometimes 2 days, that it would take to get my stuff received compared to UPS, you know, UPS ground,
mm-hmm.
which is not bad for the cost savings.
Right. So you just have to plan that extra day or two uh-huh. in your workflow, right? But I imagine, other than Christmas, right, we got to throw that out of the picture because that, you know, that's just too complicated. You just have to add those 2 days and pretty monthly, it probably gets to be pretty easy.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
There's a huge benefit to LTL. I mean, I know there's one or two people in our Young Guns group that are considering warehouses for this coming year, really because of doing LTL.
Okay, because they could see the savings that would pay for itself. You know, I think that your ability to turn inventory so quickly has to be, you know, just a great skill set. And you're building, especially with your experience, you have the ability to get that facility ready. I just think that's great. So you're building a bigger facility. You're getting it ready for LTL. It also probably helps on the employee side. You don't need as many employees because you're not building boxes, right? That takes time, right? All those things take time. Everything takes time.
Yeah, and it's much more efficient. And there's a huge cost savings in the shipping, but there's a huge cost savings in boxes too.
Okay.
You know, if I'm shipping a 12 pallet LTL load and I only have 30 or 40 boxes in the whole load, if shipping that UPS ground would be hundreds of boxes.
Well, yeah, right.
There's a big cost savings in that.
Hmm. That's great. All right. I'm really impressed. I'm really impressed the way that you've approach the business. And again, I think it, you know, you've taken advantage of all these things that you've learned over the years. Do you feel like you finally found what you were designed to do, all these things have been preparing you for?
Absolutely. I love what I'm doing right now. I love it. You know, I'm happy. I wouldn't say I have more free time because I am busy,
mm-hmm.
but I have the time when I need it. know, that working for, you know, a corporate company doesn't really work that way.
Are you unemployable now?
It would be tough.
Yeah, it would take a lot, right? It would take a, it would be a big check.
If I could do what I'm doing for a few years and then have to go back to the normal workforce, I would just be happy for the few years that I've been doing it. So
that's awesome.
I can't complain ever.
All right. Any books, podcasts, anything you could recommend for our listeners to help them get their mind in this mindset that you have?
Nothing off the top of my head.
Okay, just put your head down and do the work, really,
yeah,
is your advice.
The
right?
only
okay.
The only book I really read was the $8 book by Chris Green.
Well, there you go. That's a great recommendation, right? You know, I was just thinking about that today because somebody was like, wait, you have an e-commerce business? It's easy, right? You just sit there and push a button. I'm like, no, buy Chris Green's book. Oh, what's that? You got to buy the book, physically buy. I'm not giving it to you. You got to go physically buy it. They'll never go buy it.
Yeah, and absolutely. And then if you read that book, you should have the motivation needed. If you don't, then it might not be the best thing.
And that's a great way to stop that conversation. Wait, you want me to actually go spend some money and do something? Oh, I'm out. Okay, good. All right.
Good luck.
All right. The goal of the podcast is to help people move forward, right? They get to that $20,000, $30,000 a month when they want to go full-time, but they can't because they just can't get past that point of stuck. Think back. What was it that helped you get past that point that you could give some advice to somebody who's really there?
So I think the biggest thing for me was I knew the job that I was at was not a career. I had been there a long time, but I knew I couldn't retire from there. So it was either now or later that I'd be looking for a job. You know, so for me, it was just taking the leap and doing it now. It had to work for me. I had to succeed.
You burn the bridge, right? Or you burn the boats, right? They always say, I burned the boats, right? Because you jumped. But you'd rather jump when you're a young gun.
Absolutely.
Than an old man like me. You know, so I get that, you know, and I think that there is some rhyme to that, and I think that is great advice. Yep. All right, best way to get in touch with you, Matt?
If this business fails for me when I'm 32, I'd rather that than when I'm, you know, 56.
Hey, be gentle there. I'm not there yet. I'm getting close.
That's the truth.
I'm getting close. I'll knock it off. All right. Best way to get in touch with you, Matt?
On Facebook. Anybody can message me on Facebook.
And I'll put a link for you.
You send a friend request because I guess some messages don't come through.
All right, I'll put a link for you. Man, I appreciate the positivity that you guys also put together. I'm excited to interview the other guys too because it's just so neat to see honest communication, right? I mean, you guys are a band of brothers, right? There is a code amongst you. You are tight, but it's neat. I think I don't remember which conference we were at, and there were two or three of you together, and it was just so neat to see. I mean, you guys were, you know, you were stuck together and almost talking, finishing each other's sentences like a marriage. It's just really neat to see that work and, you know, in a competitive environment that you're in and you're still able to do it. I just think that's a great skill. And that, to me, is the reason that you've had the success because you've been able to do that. And I just think it's awesome. So
I completely agree. And if you can't have fun doing what you're doing.
Great 2016 and stay out of my town. Take care, pal.
I can't make any promises.
I know you can. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. I knew you'd like it. Again, build, build, build. Strategy, strategy. Focus, focus, focus. You know, listen to Matt's advice. I got a forklift. Well, now he's saying, you know what? I shouldn't have got that forklift. The thing that you got to realize when you get into this commercial insurance and things like that, these things are very, very expensive and they're long tails. You think you need one. You actually use it so infrequent. If you have a loading dock, you use a pallet jack, there's no increase in insurance. So really think it through and really avoid tying up funds for something that's going to sit idle 99.5% of the time. Great story. There are three other guys coming up, and they're just as amazing, just incredible sales, incredible stories, and I look forward to it. So jump over to the website, ecommercemomentum.com, and check out what we got going on there. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.